This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Tech Talk, and my name is Jeff Sandhu. And today on the show, I have here with me someone who calls himself the insufferable tech evangelist, Keith Rosario. Keith, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jeff. Nice to be here, man.
And you can check out some of the stuff that Keith blogs about on his site. It's keithrosario.com. And today's focus is something slightly different from the usual that I always talk about on Tech Talk. We're going to be talking about the consequences of being tech illiterate in today's highly advanced digital world. Almost anything you do today has a tech element. So, Keith, I think we got to start off first with talking about what is tech illiterate in today's world, especially.
Yeah, of course. I mean, tech literacy is, there's no real clear definition of it. No one has fully defined it. But, you know, we live in an ironic sort of generation. We are surrounded by so much of technology, yet a lot of people don't know how it works. Mm. So it's full of internet. We use our handphones all the time, our smartphones. We are fully connected, but we don't really understand how this thing called the internet works. We don't know what the protocols to use. We don't know how to secure ourselves. And I think it's something that's been going on for a long time. So people haven't been, 100%, on the ball in terms of tech. But the consequences of not knowing technology has increased exponentially over the years.
Mm, and a lot of this sounds like it's the core of it is the internet itself.
Exactly. Yes.
Is that the core of everyone's problems or security issues and so forth?
Well, the internet is a connection of networks, right? So it's an interconnecting network. And because it's interconnected and because you on the internet is connected to everyone else on the internet, that also means you are exposed to everyone else on the internet. So that actually lends to itself, right? So you are connected to this network where there are good guys and there are a lot of bad guys as well.
It's just like the real world anyway.
It's just like the real world, yeah. But a bad guy in Russia can't harm you in Malaysia, right? But a bad guy in Russia, you on the internet, doesn't make a difference. Whether you're in Russia, Estonia, anywhere else in the world, you are connected. So bad guys on the internet have actually a higher advantage than the real world bad guys, I would say.
All right. So what's the impact then to the society of tech illiteracy?
Well, so I have this know-nothing blog in the middle of the nowhere internet, yeah? But the single most popular post on the blog is how to change your Wi-Fi password.
Oh, great.
Exactly. So how to change your unified Wi-Fi password. And I checked it just before I came in. So, yeah. So it gets about 150, 200 hits a day.
Wow.
And since the 4 years I've written on it, 200,000 hits in total. For that one post, how to change your Unify Wi-Fi password. Now, Unify has about 800,000 subscribers. 200,000 of them came to my blog to see how to change the Wi-Fi password.
Wow.
That's how prevalent the problem is.
Yeah.
Because I would make the case, if you're going online, Google, and you're trying to find out how to change your Wi-Fi password,
your blog will probably
don't know much else. Huh?
Yeah.
If I ramp up the technical difficulty just a little bit, right? So how to do dynamic DNS, or how to do port forwarding, that number drops by a factor of 10 or 100. And so I would say a lot of people operate in that space where they're trying to figure out how to change Wi-Fi passwords, but they don't really know what else they've exposed to. They don't really know how to secure themselves on the internet.
So I think we always tend to focus on people should know how to change the passwords and so forth.
Yeah.
But there's actually a large generation where for them, internet is a very new thing. Like they grew up without the internet. So for them, it is something, changing a unified password, going through a few steps is something,
it's a
difficult thing. Right?
Exactly.
Okay. Now, there seems to be a lot of scams as well.
Yeah.
How do these scams work and how do they target people? Because it seems like it's a random number of people that that gets affected.
Yeah, so the way it works, and these scams are quite sophisticated. They're run by very sophisticated organizations, entire ecosystem of hackers and bad guys together working together. But you got a couple of differences. So one of them is they blast out emails, and in those emails lie malicious code or malicious links. And 1% or 0.1% of people click on them, and that's enough to run a sustainable criminal business, let's say, yeah? But it all hinges on a certain number of things. It hinges on the ignorance of the user in many cases, right? So ransomware, for example, you click on a link, it installs an application, encrypts all your software, and then asks you for Bitcoin. The thing is that a lot of people seem to think that the antivirus they have running on their machine is good enough protection, protects them all the time. If you're listening to this, an antivirus protects you from some viruses. A good one will protect you from most, but none of them protect you from all. It's like driving, it's like driving a safe Volvo. It's a safe car, yeah, but it doesn't mean that you can drive without a seatbelt 160 kilometers on the highway. It doesn't work that way.
Mm.
You got a lot of scams also that work outside of this ambit. So you've got this thing called the Windows support scam. So someone calls you and says, hi, you know, I'm from Microsoft. We discovered that your computer has a virus. And then they walk you through this elaborate thing where they show you the event viewer, and there's a lot of errors inside. And say, oh, look, your computer is very hacked. Like, as though there's a scale of hacking, you know, slightly hacked, moderately hacked, and very hacked. What is it? You know, they use these terms, and techies go like, hey, that's all. And it doesn't make sense. But the average person goes, oh, hacked, you know.
I'm slightly
hacked and moderately hacked. What do I have to do, you know? And they say, well, actually, your Windows warranty has expired, so now you got to pay $200. And then they just scam these guys out of $200. And in some cases, actually in most cases, they install more malware into the PC so that they can get more money. I mean, these are criminals, and you know, you got a customer, might as well get as much money as you can from the customer. But you know, it all hinges on people not knowing what it is. So unfortunately, as you said, the older generation gets hit by this more than the newer generation. But I think it's a prevalent thing throughout society, and that's a problem.
Yeah. And there's nothing we could do to catch these kind of criminals, because you know they're anonymous in that sense, and you know the internet is a very dark place.
Well, to a certain degree, that's correct. So some of them are anonymous. Some of them we know where they are, and we know who they are. there's an entire organization called the Russian Business Alliance or network, I can't remember. But, you know, in some cases, they're protected by the governments. They operate in shady parts of the world where the long arm of the law doesn't necessarily reach. They operate in these funny places. So in some cases, we know. In some cases, we don't know. But it's very hard to catch because of the international nature of it, and because the internet allows you to hack someone or scam someone from a distance where you're in another legal jurisdiction. It adds to the complexity of finding them.
All right. Yeah. I'm speaking to Keith Rosario. He's a tech blogger who loves his security stories. You can check out the stories on keithrosario.com. And when we come back in just a moment, we'll talk about the impact of BYOD, Bring Your Own Device. This has been Tech Talk on BFM 89.9. This is Tech Talk, and my name is Jeff Sandu, and I'm speaking to Keith Rosario. He's a tech blogger, and he blogs at keithrosario.com. He's the insufferable tech evangelist, which is, I have no idea why did you call yourself the insufferable tech evangelist, you know.
It's a failed marketing gimmick.
But it stuck with you.
It's stuck.
It's failed. But then it sort of worked.
It sort of worked.
Now, we're talking about being tech illiterate in today's world. And, you know, businesses today are now, you know, embarking on new types of solutions like BYOD, Bring Your Own Device. How is this impacting the business in terms of the security side?
Of course, man. So, in most cases, people bring their own device. So they bring their own smartphones, they bring their own laptops, they connect it to the corporate network. And then that blurs the line between your corporate network and the regular internet, because you've got a lot of devices that are, you know, living in both realms, so to speak. They're living in the corporate network during the day, and then they go back home. So any compromise on those devices, any compromise on the phone or on the, then can spread within your corporate network. Now, I use the word corporate network, and a lot of people think it's big corporations, but even small
ones,
companies, they have their own network. They've got their own shared drive stuck in the corner there. And so if you have ransomware on your laptop, for example, it could infect the shared drive where you have all your, you know, GST sales filings for the year. You don't want to lose that.
Oh, yeah.
And that sort of thing. So you got a bunch of people running around not knowing how to secure the devices, and they bring those devices to a network that you hope is secure. That, of course, you know, that's a recipe for disaster. I mean, Target, for example, they were hacked not because of their corporate network, but they were hacked because their supplier brought in a malicious or a compromised device and plugged it into the network. So in a multi-million dollar class action lawsuit because of
Target was a very big case. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Now, what can businesses or organizations do then? Policies and all, I mean, I'm sure they've got it all sorted out, but they still, time and time again...
Exactly. I mean, one of the most, let's say, the biggest threat vector is usually some sort of spear phishing, right? So this is when a specific email is sent to a specific person in the organization to get them to click a link, download a certain file, or visit something. That's why it's called spear. It's very targeted. Yeah? There are some people who suggest we can do some sort of corporate inoculation. You know, so use a biological lens in it. So a biological virus, what would you do? You would immunize the host. And so in this case, you would send spear phishing emails to your own people in your own network and try to get them. And so if they click on it, then you say, well, you know, you shouldn't have clicked on it. And you go through a proper training exercise. But, you know, it's sort of like immunizing your corporate network in case you have somebody spear phishing or somebody attacking you, that sort of thing. But, you know, we can patch software. We can patch hardware. Well, we can change branch hardware, but humanware is where most of
it seems to always be down to human error.
Exactly, yeah.
And we can't do anything because of the human nature itself of us making mistakes. And, you know, sometimes it's just, you know, it's not that we don't know, it's just we tend to sometimes forget.
But, yeah, sometimes we forget.
Or losing a device.
Losing a device. It's, you know, but you know, some things, like, for example, tailgating, you know, when you tailgate someone in the office, so someone walks in and you tailgate without the access card. But, you know, the way you address that is you say, well, everybody has to tap in on its own and everybody close the door. That's rude. You know, that's not socially acceptable. You know, if you walk in, you're expected to hold the door.
Hold the door for someone.
So, but that's not entirely secure. So
yeah.
how do you... So security is always a compromise between convenience and security, or, you know, being nice and security and that sort of thing. So,
and even new technologies like the Internet of Things and all the amount of data that they, you know, take. And also for even that as well, you know, you're compromising a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot.
The Internet of Things is going to be a big problem. Yeah, as more and more stuff goes online.
Microwave could be the killer machine that, you know, shuts down the most expensive
the power grid or something like that because of
from a microwave.
Yeah.
Now, so how could an organization, where should they start? I mean, like, you know, should they do trainings, you know, or should they, you know, send out, you know, hire the best IT security experts, or, you know, or let's talk about for the smaller companies. Let's talk about the SMEs then, you know, for those who don't have, you know, large resources to spend on all this, right? For the smaller ones, because they seem to go head first when it's a new technology, because for them it's like, you know, we could move quicker, we could move more agile in that sense. So what could they do in order for them to, like, just be more secure?
Well, the good news is that a lot of these smaller companies are opting for sort of cloud services. It's a bit cheaper, it's more OPEX and CAPEX, it's, you know, but it's also more secure. So if you've got like 10 people in the organization, buying Gmail for everyone is cheaper than and more secure than hosting your own email server, that sort of thing, yeah? So there's some good news there. And so if you're a small company and you're worried about yourself and you don't have the budget to afford an IT professional, et cetera, and, you know, who does? Security guys cost a lot of money.
I'm in the wrong field. I'm in the wrong field.
I
thought, you know, talking security on air would do the same, but it's not. It's not.
There's actually a dearth of security professionals, so you should try and get a CISSP. But the point is that you need to have employees that are themselves, you know, educated in the field. If you're going to use these tools, they should know what are the benefits of using them, or what are the security considerations around them. A lot of times we didn't cover shadow IT. That's when, you know, employees use sort of B2C offerings to do, and it could be like a well-motivated employee. So they say, I got to send a 10-megabyte file to my supplier, emails only 5-megabyte attachments, so I create this free Dropbox account, upload it there, I send a link. And that's like, you know, it's a good employee, got the job done, but, you know, forgets that the Dropbox is publicly visible, everybody can see it, and forgets to delete it and that sort of thing. And then your corporate data, or worse, your customer's private data is up there in the internet floating around for someone to click and download, that sort of thing. And these are the sorts of things that people need to be really wary about, and we need to be really concerned. And the problem is that if you're a small organization and you don't have the right IT skills inside, you will probably don't even know where your vulnerabilities are, right? And then that's a big problem. And I think that I don't really have an answer to it, but that's a huge issue that we need to address. Yeah.
But it's, I mean, at least there are, you would see some frameworks being done in place, like, you know, the Personal Data Protection Act is something that, you know, at least is a good step in the right direction in that sense, would you say?
That's a piece of legislation, not really a framework, but, you know, it says things like it should be reasonably protected or adequately protected. I'm not sure what the legal fee. They don't specify on a technical level what it needs to be. Because, of course, the technology will far outpace our ability to legislate.
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, all these legislations are written in very...
Level one.
Every fairy terms, I'd say. Yeah? So, you can't really do much on a technical perspective. What does adequately or reasonably protected mean? What I would say is that there are technical frameworks. There are the right ways to do passwords, for example. There are right ways to do this and that and encryption, etc. So you got to encrypt your data at rest and in transit. Those sorts of high-level principles. But getting it down, there is no avoiding getting the right IT skills. Whether or not you outsource it to someone to do it for you, or whether you do it yourself by hiring the right talent, you need the people and you need the skills to do it.
Let's take out the person from the organization. At the end of the day, he's still a consumer of the internet on his own personal capacity. What can they do to sort of be more protected? I know you said, you know, antivirus can only do so much.
Yeah.
But what else can they do?
What else can they do? There's a couple of...
Go to KeithRosario.com.
Exactly. You got to go read my blog. So, plugging it in, yeah. Actually, one of the biggest sort of threats that people have is that, as you say, so antivirus is good. You still need it, even though it's not fully effective because it protects you from like the background radiation threats, etc. But you also have the other bits where passwords. A lot of people use the same passwords for different services. You know, Laoyat Forum, they use the same password as Maybank to you. That's very, very bad.
Don't do that,
exactly. Yeah. And they use weak passwords. So, you know, just Google the fappening, if you know what it means.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So that's it's all caused by weak passwords. So you need strong passwords and you need individual passwords. Impossible for a human being to do. So you need a password manager.
Yeah.
And if I'm going to give one piece of advice, that's got to be it. So use a password manager and make sure you have individual passwords for your services that you use. At least that, make sure that whatever threat that you have is isolated to just that service, so that it doesn't spill onto the others. Yeah.
My advice would be actually once in every 3 months, schedule something in your calendar, make it like an appointment basis, you know, say, if let's say you come into work at 10 a.m., yeah. Once every 3 months, just, you know, schedule an appointment at 10 o'clock on like Monday or Friday, whenever it's your free day, and just, you know, make an appointment, say, change banking password. You know? So at least once every 3 months, you're changing the password, you would tend to be at least, you know, a bit more easy in the sense whenever you suddenly get a message saying that, you know, this company has been breached and all the passwords are leaked out.
Exactly.
And, you know,
I usually don't
even get like Ashley Madison and stuff like this, right? Look at those guys, right? So
exactly. So Ashley Madison, actually they did some things right. So some of the passwords were encrypted correctly, or at least hashed correctly, so that, you know, you don't get it. Well, some things they did completely wrong.
Yeah.
Morally very bad company, of course. But I mean, but Ashley Madison is just one of the many companies that are being hacked that we know of, right? So sometimes the company could have been hacked. They don't, you know, go public with it. There is some legislation in the U.S. that forces companies to go, or I think in the works. Malaysia, I don't think we have something similar, and we should, you know.
Mm.
Especially as more corporations start using things like biometrics. So I'm usually a bit wary about biometrics, right? So if I lose my password, I can, you know, set a new password. That's fine. If I lose my credit card, or if my credit card get compromised, issue me a new one, new account number. It's a bit of a hassle, but it's okay. But if someone gets my thumbprint, you know, no one's going to reissue me a new thumbprint, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, how are you securing the data? And this is actually not theoretical. So the Office of People Management in the U.S., they lost some, I got no, so many million.
Yeah,
we think to the Chinese. So they have all of the, I mean, the Chinese government, so they have all of the thumbprints of people. And it's a problem because that's personal information and it never expires. You can't change the thumbprint.
Yeah,
right?
So
be careful of those things.
Now, what role does the media have in this sort of problem? Well, they're talking to me, so...
Talking to you, yeah. But I have a beef to pick with some of these guys.
Hopefully it's not me and BFM Radio, you know, because we're bringing you on here.
Okay, that's not too bad. But about a year or two ago, there was this report in The Star that said that this kid somewhere in Sabah made a new app that Google wanted to buy for thousands of dollars.
Oh, yes.
Turned out it was like an April Fool's joke. I mean,
of course,
simple thing. Every year, we get this thing of Google was hacked. Google Malaysia was hacked. But actually, what turns out was Meinik was hacked. So again, you know, you got to be able to report that the media, and specifically about newspapers, talk about Hollywood in a bit. So the media and the newspapers, I think they have a responsibility to help people make sense of these issues, especially when most people are a bit tech literate, so they need to make sense of it. But they're not doing, I think, a very good job, and that's why people don't really understand. They can't differentiate between Meinik getting hacked and Google getting hacked, and where are the vulnerabilities, and where I should be, who I should be able to trust, and who I shouldn't be trusting anymore, that sort of thing. And it's not just a Malaysian issue. It's also
a
global problem. So media all over the world. So Ahmed, the clock guy.
Yeah.
if you can talk about this, Ahmed was this guy, a Muslim student in, you know, I think Irvine, Texas or somewhere. Not exactly the bastion of diversity and inclusiveness. But he brought a clock to school, showed it to his engineering teacher. Engineering teacher said, it's good, keep it away. His English teacher freaked out, thought it was a bomb. Called the police. The police came in, and because he was a Muslim student, they gave him a bit more, you know, attention than he needed. A couple of things, of course, because the English teacher should know that a bomb in the real world doesn't look like a clock. So watching too much Mission Impossible, so you know, a bomb needs an explosive, needs some chemicals. Yeah. There were no chemicals there. But what the media didn't report was that Ahmed didn't really build a clock. He just took a clock out of an enclosure and then put it into a pencil box, made it look a bit untidy, but it was, you know, a mass-produced clock. And there were many sort of the blogs that I read, you know, from my people, the tech geeks, they pointed out that, well, that's a mass-manufactured PCB. It's definitely not something that he built. And he's getting invites by President Obama and going to
Facebook
Twitter intern
and,
yeah, and all that. Not for building something, because he didn't build something. And there are kids out there who are building much more than him. And it's okay if Microsoft wants to give him a bunch of stuff, but that's not because he built it. It's because he was religiously or racially discriminated. But the media lost that. At least the mainstream media didn't report that. If you go to like the tech geeky media, you would see that front and forward, right? People discuss that. But in the mainstream media, it was all about this, and this guy's a genius. He built a clock. He's going to be the next, you know, whatever. And these are the sorts of places where we need the media to help us understand. And I think that they themselves are a bit tech literate, and they themselves need some help to make sense of it. But it's a very important thing. Technology is ubiquitous, and we need people to help us make sense of it.
Especially when, you know, it is part of our daily lives.
Exactly,
it
yeah.
is, you know, you wake up, you are immediately connected, right?
Yeah, yeah. Right. And then before that, so we talk about Hollywood.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about Hollywood.
Let's talk about Hollywood. So I watched Iron Man 3 the other day.
All right.
And,
a bit,
you know,
a while delayed, but...
Yeah. So, and at one point in the movie, Tony Stark goes like, I want you to get up on the roof and boost the ISDNs by 30%. And this guy goes up on the roof and suddenly his internet connection goes up faster by 30%. I mean, that's not how it works in real life. And, you know, I mean, someone better put him in touch with our communications minister.
Because that's not how it
works. But, you know, you see things like, you know, the girl with the dragon tattoo and I forgot they're on Criminal Minds.
Oh,
and, you know,
yeah,
these guys,
man.
You know, I need to hack into the NSA. Give me a minute. And then I'm in. That's not how it works. And people have an idea that that's how hackers look like, right? And so when we get these real-world threats from Anonymous, or we see things like this guy on a plane said he could, you know, break down the avionics, people panic because they don't know what's going on. You know, technology sufficiently advanced is indistinguishable from magic. And to these muggles, it's like Harry Potter and his gang is terrorizing the world. So there's an issue there, and the media really need to up their game, I think.
Mm.
Yeah.
And how can they do that?
I mean, Hollywood is creative, right? So some of the movies they produce are not historically accurate or scientific. So maybe I can give Hollywood a pass. but they should still be a bit more accurate.
But for the media,
I think the media in the newspapers and in the videos, I think it's partly, you know, my people's fault, the tech geeks. We should also be, you know, helping these people make sense of it. And some of these issues are really complicated, right? Mm. And I can sympathize because when I listen to BFM sometimes, a lot of this financial stuff, it's lost on me, right? What's a warrant? I don't know. Who cares, right? And so when it's time for us to explain things like, what does DNS mean? Mm. How is it? How does Google.com webpage magically appear in your browser? It takes time and effort to understand that process, and only after you understand that process can you understand what happened.
Yeah.
But we got to work harder on trying to educate people to do that. Yeah.
And it takes it's like a two-way connection.
It's a two-way connection, exactly. Yeah.
And hopefully we will see more better sort of reporting in terms of, you know, helping the people, not just the ones who are, you know, who are so used to tech, but the majority of the population.
Yeah, the bulk of the population. Yeah, is
those, you know, for them, internet is still a very new thing. And having the media, you know, the radios, newspapers, and even the online media as well, having them to, you know, sort of push out informations like this to the majority of the market, I think will really help as well.
Exactly, yeah.
Because these are the mediums that, you know, they're familiar with, and, you know.
So they don't read Wired.
they won't go.
Well, they should read KeithRosero.com. but you're right, exactly. So we need to get the mainstream media, and it's the mainstream media that needs to up the game and really help people make sense of this. I'm not saying fully articulate the problem, but at least, you know, accurately describe what's going on.
All right. I've been speaking to Keith Rosario. He's a tech blogger, and you can check out his blog post in case you have not heard this whole show. It is keithrosario.com. This has been Tech Talk on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.